Thanks for our argument.
Okay.
What's the argument?
You are with...
Whether or not alligators crawl or walk.
Look, let me...
Shut up! Everybody shut up!
No, we won't bring that in.
You are witnessing some of the truly dumbest conversations that have ever happened in this studio.
What's the world coming to?
So this is all whether alligators crawl or walk?
Yeah.
I don't... Yeah, that's a tough one.
Here's the thing. The science I'm not saying it's a definitive descriptor. I'm just saying it's when you describe an alligator, you can use crawling. It's a crawling animal.
I mean, it walks on its feet and it tends to not drag its underside, I think, except for the tail, right?
Boom. Okay. And that's what science says.
When you...
Why is this happening?
Descriptor.
What is going on?
Okay, I'm done. I'm letting you go.
Well, all right then.
Are his front, the front part of the alligator, is those his arms or his legs?
His legs. He doesn't pick things up with it.
His four legs.
His four legs.
Yeah, like a deer has four legs, or a dog has four legs, or.
Deer has six legs.
Only in Fallout.
What is happening?
Those antlers are actually legs on their heads.
Those are legs. Those are stiff legs. You ever see a deer walk on his head? Legs?
On his head legs?
They jam them into the ceiling and walk on the ceiling.
Yeah. You know, when
what a feeling.
They hit them. Fighting. Punching each other.
Huh. That's a pretty...
You mean kicking
each other. Yeah, yeah, sorry.
That's a pretty unique worldview.
Isn't it?
I think so.
I'm very upset today.
I can tell.
I came in here believing one thing. And now I don't believe in anything or anybody.
And with that, welcome to week 729 of the Crankcast.
Fucking politics.
They're dividing everybody. You and your animal politics. So, I'm kind of afraid to ask, but what else is new?
That's about it. That's what's been going on over here. I'm just drawing. You know what I do.
Yeah.
Mike's just here crawling to the finish line.
I don't know if we can say what it is, but I saw the art that you did for that thing we're doing for that company.
Oh, God. What art?
The 12 pages. The.
Oh, you're working on that?
Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to say it like that, dude.
No, I think that's great.
That's too worse.
I think it's great that you're working on it. I was not pleased to be.
It was it's Team Battlebug, I think. Didn't they get Alan for it?
Did they? Nobody tells me anything.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. When I was talking to the editor, when he first asked me about it.
Here's the thing. I'm glad you guys are working on it because then it'll look good, but I'm not happy with what I did.
Oh, I thought it looked pretty cool, man. It's those characters get some wacky designs. And that, whatever that is, what do they call those? Groundchuck? No, the woodchuck or squirrel or whatever the hell it was on that one panel looked great.
The ground squirrel.
Yeah, that thing.
All right, well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. But, that was a low point for the last couple of weeks for me.
Yeah, I'm not 100%.
The cause of much stress in my life.
Oh. I'm not 100% sure that that Alan's working on it, but last I heard, that's who he was contacting about it.
If Alan's working on it, it means it's going to look good, at least.
When he first talked to me, he said he hadn't had a colorist yet, and I suggested Alan or Marissa.
Yeah, those are good choices.
Thanks, Frank.
I was suggesting people that have worked over Mike. You know? Like, that I know.
Thanks, Craig.
But, yeah, he said he was going to contact Alan, so I don't know. Anyway. It seems like a silly, fun project. I don't know.
You're a silly, fun project.
I don't know. It's weird. Anyway. Oh, so I'm reading another comic from that last just cheap batch I got from eBay.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, did you ever read a book called Synergy from Caliber? It was early 90s then?
No, but I know what you're talking about.
It's kind of a jam book.
You're a jam book.
Yeah. And it's basically a riff on Dante's Inferno.
Mm-hmm.
And so each section's like about the different sinners in hell or whatever. And each of those are done by different artists. Mm-hmm. And then there's like the guy named Galen Showman. I don't know. I'm not familiar with anything else he's done. But he was the continuity artist or the, you know, did the bracketing stuff. And, but it's, I mean, this book's got like a ton of people in it. Like Bendis is in there. Let's see, who else? There's a couple of names I recognize from like 90s stuff. Like, I'm going to butcher this name, but Jim Calafiore.
Yeah.
He's in there. Guy Davis is in there. Who else? Somebody else I recognized. Troy Nixie.
Oh, yeah.
Vincent Locke was in there. David Max in there. And it's all like, you know, this was all done in like 93. I think it was published in 94. So it's like real early work by all these people. Or fairly early work, you know. But, yeah, it's weird, man. It's like, you know, the book itself's okay. It's just, you got to have a taste for that kind of, you know, I don't know what to put it. Because it's all talking about sin and shit, so it's all real dreary, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting seeing all these different artists, like, mixed together in one book. There's like, yeah, I don't know, it's pretty cool. You can find it real cheap, too, on eBay and stuff. A couple of bucks. Oh, and the series, let's see, the writer was Kyle Garrett. I don't know. But, yeah, it's called Synergy, spelled S-I-N-E-R-G-Y. And then subtitled A Journey Through Hell. I kind of vaguely remember seeing it on the shelves back then, but I never picked it up. Which was weird, because I was reading other Caliber stuff back then.
Welcome to Oblivion.
But, yeah, anyway, so it's interesting. I just thought I'd recommend that to anybody. Check something old out. Yeah, okay then. Moving on. So, okay, starting, I guess about 2 months ago, whenever it was, I got really busy when I just took on too much work and I couldn't do anything else. I kind of shut myself off from the news because it was really distracting.
No, you're going to, okay.
And, well, I just, so I haven't really been paying attention to what's going on outside of my own interests or whatever, you know, like, I've read articles, like, about odds and ends, but nothing really relating with news right now, you know. So I just saw that there's a whole bunch of shit going on again.
You're going to get Josh started.
I don't mean to. It's like one of those things where it's, you know, it's weird because cutting myself off is, I don't think that's a good thing because I'm not really aware of what's going on. But at the same time, I have felt more relaxed despite the workload in the past 2 months than I have in the past, like, since 2016. You know?
You want a cookie for that?
No, it's just weird, man. Because between that and just not going to Twitter anymore and stuff like that, I'm not getting the noise, the level of noise I was getting before.
Sounds like somebody's bragging.
Why is that bragging?
Sound like somebody's bragging, everybody?
It's only bragging if you're envious of it. Are you envious, Mike?
Of everything, yes.
Okay. Okay. Anyway, but yeah, that's just kind of neat. And
that's what somebody who's bragging would say.
What else is going on? I watched a weird Jeff Bridges movie I'd never seen before last night.
Yeah?
It's apparently got a bunch of different names, but on Amazon right now it's just called Success. And it's from 1980, and it's got Ned Beatty in it, too. And it's this weird... I don't even know what to call it. The guy's married. He's living in Germany. Jeff Bridges' character is living in Germany. He's married to his boss's daughter, and they work for, like, a credit card loan company or something. But everybody treats him like he's just a loser. So he creates this fake identity to become more of a tough guy. Like, he acts like he's a Chicago mobster or something. And hires a hooker to teach him how to have good sex, because his wife won't have sex with him.
When was this?
1980.
Really?
Yeah. And then, and then this persona kind of takes over, and he winds up robbing the credit card company in vaults. It just, and then there's this whole confusing plot where he pretends he was kidnapped so he can come back, and then his wife is crazy and shoots him, and then he has to take on that Mac persona again to, like, run away with her. It's weird, dude. I don't even. It's not really good, but it's not terrible. Like, it's interesting. And it's, like, young Jeff Bridges. And he's kind of weird in it, you know.
Huh.
But,
really interesting.
Yeah, that's on Amazon. If anybody wants to check it out.
Like, no.
Yeah, you don't have to. It's okay. Anyway. What else? How's your Bigfoot watching go?
It's becoming tiring.
Yeah? Wearing on you?
It's wearing on me a little bit.
But there's probably still so much more to see.
There is. Did you recommend that Woodsman movie to me?
What is Woodsman?
The one where he is taping a, like, Bear Grylls kind of outdoors program.
Oh, I don't think so, no. That doesn't sound familiar.
It was real boring. Oh. I was going to yell at you, so I won't yell at you.
Okay. Yeah, no, that doesn't sound familiar. They, I'm trying to find it on Amazon so I can see what you're talking about, make sure it wasn't me. Did it have somebody named Maurice Ripke in it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that wasn't me. You can go yell at somebody else.
It's on the, it takes place on the island of Belize.
Belize is an island?
No, it's not an island. But I thought it was.
So it's the island of make-believe.
Island of make-believe.
Oh,
you're so smart.
Oh.
You know what? You have put yourself in my good graces again.
Oh, thanks. Do I get a frog?
No, you don't get a frog.
This is what this frog thing is.
I'm not sure what the frog thing is. It's like a weird currency now.
Yep.
It's a...
You don't got nothing.
But I have all the frogs. It's like, we've established that I have all the frogs.
Not all
of
them.
I've got nothing.
You got four frogs.
I've got 1,000-something.
No.
That
is not what happened.
Yeah, look it up.
You have five. It's written right here.
I thought I had thousands.
Five.
What actually backs this Batrachian currency?
What? What did you just say?
What?
What did he just mean? What does that mean, Josh? What is that word he just used?
Currency?
Dickhead. Fuck.
Batrachian, it's a frog. Amphibian.
Did you just look that up, or you have that on the top of your mind?
No, that's been stuck in my head for years, because it was in a H.P. Lovecraft story when I was a kid.
Oh, okay.
And it's a weird-looking word. Mm. But, anyway.
Trapped in his head for years, and finally was able to get it out.
Well, it's not often you get to use that in conversation, you know?
This is my moment!
Score! So yeah. What are the rules backing this strange currency of yours?
There are no rules. That's why none of us understand it.
Oh, okay.
Sean says he deserves all the frogs because he came up with the frog. He basically told us about the frog, which is a Jack Kirby invention from Black Panther.
Sovereign Frog.
Like, it's, yeah.
They were some sort of like mystical portal frogs or something, weren't they?
Yeah, I guess.
One frog for Crank.
No!
Yeah. He's in there now. He's got frogs.
Oh, yeah, and by the way, this last episode, needed more Sean.
Sorry.
Oh, no, you guys were fine. You were as good as you were on the earlier episodes, but just needed
more
Sean.
Yeah, we had a lot more Sean. And then
I wasn't talking about
the video game episode. No, I know.
Sean, we recorded an episode, but Sean can't seem to get his shit together.
That's why he's got no frogs.
Nope.
He's got three. He's in second place.
Behind me?
Yeah.
Does that got all the frogs?
You got five.
So I still have the most frogs?
Yeah.
So see? Is there a fixed frogs, number of frogs?
No, it's not zero frog game.
Infinite frogs.
It's like Bitcoin.
It's infinite frogs.
It's a digital currency like Bitcoin.
Right. So there's a fixed number of frogs somewhere.
There's a theoretical limit to frogs.
I mean, they say there is, but have we ever seen it?
And much like Bitcoin, this is its own ball of crazy.
Yeah, no shit. I don't like it. I'm not into this anymore. I'm not into anything anymore.
It'll be all right.
I don't know.
Sure, it will. I'm trying to think of what. Oh, Addison, I wanted to ask you something.
Yeah.
When you were.
What's your deal?
What's your deal?
I've been asking myself that for years.
What's your fucking problem?
When you were working production at Image.
Yeah.
And you'd assemble a book, and you'd output the book to send to whoever, Quebecor or whoever you guys were using?
Quebecois. Mm-hmm.
What was the file output you were using? Was it one large combined PDF, or did you send them the InDesign file and the loose files? Or?
So I would export a PDF from InDesign, and then I would open that PDF in Acrobat and then split the PDF into individual PDF pages.
Really? So did InDesign not, that doesn't like support individual page output?
Either export one big PDF or you have to export each page individually, like one at a time.
Oh, that sucks.
It's super quick though. You just open an Acrobat and you hit split and it does it super quick.
Okay, so you did wind up sending them like separate files, though, right?
Yeah.
In the end.
Don't leave.
You're all jerks. I'm going.
Why is Josh leaving?
Because then you'd upload them to, you know, the printer. There's a word for that site, type of site.
Like computer.
Serial. You'd have to upload them to the printer site as the individual pages, because then they get, you know, slotted in and processed.
Gotcha. So they would take care of the setting it up so pages face the right way, like backed each other right and all that?
Yeah. We didn't have to worry about the signatures. They deal with the signatures.
Okay.
We just have to make sure, you know, it's a proper in order document from 1 to 32 or whatever.
I was wondering because I had somebody asking me the other day. I was working on a pitch for somebody, and they were trying to figure out how to send stuff because I guess it's, you know, they weren't real familiar with the process or anything.
And so they were like worried about like they were getting worried about that like page one like the signature that page one is on is page 1, 2, and then like 29 and 30. Like they were worried about that stuff.
Well, they were just, their question was more of, because, you know, I sent them the same thing like I'd send an image for the final files, just the layered PDFs.
Yeah.
And they were just like, do we need flat TIFFs or do we need, I'm like, well, this has worked with Image and it's worked with other printers that I've used. I was like, other publishers' printers want different things, but they'll tell you that, like, you know.
Yeah.
So I was just trying to explain to them, but then I was like, I don't really know. I was like, this is how I do it with Image, but I'm not sure what they do in the end to send to their printer, you know. So I was just trying to figure that out.
Say there's like three major ways to send pages. There's the PDFs like you do.
Yeah.
Just done PDFs. Or you send TIFFs. Well, not three. Because then the last way is the combination. You could send a TIFF or a PSD for the art, and then an ESP or an AI file for the lettering, and any combination of those.
Right.
Or the PDFs, like you said.
I figured sending the PDFs was just the easiest because it's, they're already married, you know, like you don't have to worry about lining them up or anything. Like,
yeah. I think, like I said, the only thing that, the only thing with the PDFs was just if we had to make any kind of last minute edits.
Yeah, but that's not, I guess that's no worse than like if somebody sent you a flat TIFF with everything on it, right?
Yeah, well, you wouldn't want them to send you a flat TIFF because the PDF keeps the lettering in vector.
Oh, you'd be surprised. I've had, like, especially for smaller, like, projects that were self-published or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they specifically wanted, like, flat high-res, of course, but flat TIFFs for their printer.
Yeah, that's because some of these print-on-demand places sometimes, they don't let you upload PDFs.
That's weird.
Yeah. It's not that often, but I've run into it. I mean, I've run into places that make you upload JPEGs to print shit, and I'm like,
yeah, I still get like JPEG art from people. I'm always like, I'll work with this if you want me to, but you really should be sending it to me like a TIFF or something, because I just, even high res JPEGs, I don't trust them in the reds and stuff, you know.
Yeah, I run that. I run into that when I'm working with line artists who have never, who've only done stuff for themselves in the past.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, they'll send me pages to ink and they'll be like, this cover is a JPEG. You should really start saving your stuff as TIFFs or PSDs. I mean, they probably have them as PSDs. When you're sending it along, send over the JPEG.
On the other end of that, I get, this has been happening more frequently, and I guess it's just because people don't worry as much about disk space and bandwidth as they used to. But I'll be getting like 600 DPI 1117 CMYK uncompressed layered TIFFs as my working files. And they'll be like, just a single 22-page book will take up like 2.5 gigs or something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, really? You know, that's great for your working files locally, but why the hell are you uploading this shit?
I always, just because it's the, you know, I could easily just color it at size and just send it along and, like, ignore it, but I always resize the pages to whatever, either if the publisher gave me a template, because then it's on me. I never understand why the artist often gets to ignore the publisher template, and then I'm the one left to resize to turn in final files, art files.
Well, I mean, sometimes the colors doesn't, and the letter is the one that winds up having to do it, you know?
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's, for me, that's not that big a deal, because I just size it to my artboard, and if it doesn't match the dimensions, I'll send it back up the chain and say, look, we need this reformatted or whatever, you know?
It's also interesting seeing what DPIs different publishers use.
Yeah, that's, I don't even know what, it used to be like, 300 was the low, and no more than 600, but I don't know, what is that now?
I mean, we always exported so that anything above, what was the system? It was like, We would downsample things to 600 DPI if anything was above for some reason.
Yeah, that sounds right. I mean, when I was working in printing, and granted, this was like a long time ago, so I'm sure the plate making technology is better now. But like, pretty much anything over 350 was just going to get down-res when it got put on the plate anyway.
Yeah.
Because it's just not going to, you know, the screens weren't going to take it, you know. So it's like, I mean, and that's probably a lot better now, especially since they started getting better, like, they digitally go straight to plates now. It used to be you had to make a negative and then burn the plate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But,
yeah, I'd be curious to see a side-by-side comparison of files submitted at 600 DPI to a printer and files submitted at 300 DPI to a printer, just to see if there's any reason to go above.
And I'm still thinking, you know, I've had that drilled into me a long time ago, back when space and bandwidth were an issue, you know, so I still try to think as economically as possible. Like, why send a 2 gig file when you can send a, you know, 600 megabyte file, and it's the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as the end result goes, but... So, anyway, sorry. It may or may not be interesting for anybody listening. That's sort of like a, you know, showing you how the popcorn's made.
Yeah. I just always, it's you know, when I'll be, like, working on, like, you know, someone will, like, ask me to color a pitch or something like that. And I always hate to be the guy who has to sit and, like, talk to them about all the technical stuff.
Oh, yeah, I do that a lot.
I noticed you did this. This really needs to be this way. And this, when... Because I'm always torn, because I'm hired on as the colorist. Do I sit here and, like, tell these guys all this stuff? Or do I just take it, color it, and, you know, send it back?
I think a lot of colorists do... They just don't say anything, because I wind up dealing with it a lot. Like, when I'm doing pitches, especially with people who are just... They're pretty new, you know, and I don't mind, because they don't know any better, you know. It's not like they're consciously trying to screw around with things. Mm-hmm. They just don't know any better. And so I get something and I ask them, well, you know, what's the final output supposed to be? Mm-hmm. And I explain to them, well, okay, you got to give me CMYK files, because I could do the conversion from RGB here, but it's always going to be slightly different, and it's better to have a colorist do it, because that way they can monitor it and make sure that it comes out with how they intend it, you know.
Yeah.
And then I have to tell them, like, it's got to be, if you're, like, the most common size is 10.438 by 6.875 or whatever. But that's not, like, a hard and fast rule. It all depends on who you're publishing through and who's printing it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, I got to know what your specs are, and then these pages got to match those specs. And here's guidelines and safe lines, and this is where it's going to get cropped, et cetera, you know? Mm-hmm. And they, I mean, most time, I've never really had a problem with somebody, like, taking it badly or anything.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they want to get it right, you know. Mm-hmm. I've had a few, I did have a misunderstanding once where I didn't realize that the people they were printing it through had a slightly different page size than what, you know, most of the U.S. companies use. Mm-hmm. And I had done, like, the whole pitch, just, I assumed it was too... the size I was used to, but it was like the actual pages were a little bit taller or something like that, so it was getting cropped on the top and bottom a little bit. I was like, oh, I'm sorry, I formatted these to, like, you know, the standard size, and they went off on me like, it's not a standard, it's just what they use. My publisher uses, or my printer uses this, and I mean, it wasn't as aggressive as that, but it was, you know, like...
The things I used to get into when we would have different printers for different, like, hardcover collections.
Oh, yeah.
Just the amount of different versions of what was considered standard oversize. You know, so I'd be like, oh, what size is this printing at? Is this going to be standard oversize? And they'd be like, yeah, it's standard oversize. And then I'd format the whole book, and they're like, this is the wrong size. And I'd be like, you said standard oversize. And they're like, oh, sorry, this printer has a different standard oversize than... Just sit and reformat a whole, you know, three, gosh, how many pages is a hardcover? Like 300 plus pages?
Yeah, that's a pain in the butt.
Yeah. Don't miss those days.
Yeah, production's one of those things where it can get pretty tedious.
Yeah. And it only takes one small mistake to ruin an entire book.
Yeah. So you should be grateful to your production folks.
Send them something nice.
Yeah, or at least say a kind word, like thanks now and then. They'll appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and that was our segment on making comics.
Yeah.
We are comics relevant. Again. Well, at least I think we are.
Oh, and always remember to check LZW compression on your tips.
Yeah. And maybe flatten them. Don't do that thing where you, like, you merge all your things into a zero layer, but don't actually flatten it.
Oh, yeah.
That's another thing. I have to run batch jobs all the time where I'm, like, flattening documents. That's the other thing with, like, layered TIFFs and stuff.
Oh, my God. This is the most boring conversation I've ever heard.
Okay. I'll stop then.
Some green comic maker sitting there. All right.
Okay. Y'all keep going then.
I was just going to say, with, like, high-res layered TIFFs, they react differently when you're placing them in AI to letter over them. Lines can shift and stuff like that, but it's just because they're trying to deal with transparency and resolution at the same time. But if you flatten them, you know, I get solid lines, and I know where to, like, if I have to butt to the gutters or something, you know. So I'm always having to, like, flatten stuff to work on. But that's okay. I mean, that's a batch job. It's not a big deal.
You're a batch job.
I am a batch job. Or am I a botch job?
You are a botch job.
Why'd Josh leave?
It's not about his computer.
Oh.
Then you were boring. Yeah.
I thought it was because you were all picking on him.
We were?
I don't know. I thought I heard him say you were all mean to him.
Did he?
I think so.
That doesn't sound like Josh.
Yeah. I have to rewind and listen to when he took off.
Well, that's not going to happen.
Anyway. So.
So.
Tell us about the, I don't know. Oh my goodness. Battle Pug, what do you know?
What do I know?
What do you know? I told you I'm making a Battle Pug base, right?
Yeah, I think you did.
Okay. I've made progress. I've got all the parts I need.
I haven't Alan color my issue 5 yet. Where is that? Come on, man.
I don't know, man. Maybe he's busy.
Needs to be busy coloring that comic.
He's busy living that whatever lifestyle he lives, where he just sort of goes around and plays with horses and stuff. And coffee shops. And
I was going to say vagabond, but he's more like a vagrant.
I mean, he has steady work. And he has, like, I think he's got a girlfriend, right?
Yeah.
I see lots of pictures of her, and they seem like they've been together for a while.
Yeah.
So, like, it's not like he's a vagabond or a vagrant, really, because he's got ties. He's unpredictable. He's nomadic.
He is nomadic.
That's a good one, because nomads have families and stuff that they stayed with. I mean, vagrants and vagabonds usually have families, too, because, you know, they don't spring out of nothing. But anyway. Yeah, why isn't he coloring your book?
Mm-hmm.
You hear me, Alan? Do you hear me?
Get to work, Alan. Make it work.
Yeah, there was somewhere I was going with the Battle Pug thing, though. And I don't remember what, sorry. I haven't lettered issue 5 yet either, have I?
Because I haven't written a script.
Oh, good reason.
I should write a script.
Yeah, probably. They're handy. So, yeah, that's okay. This is still more comics making talk. Battle Pug is not done in your standard standard steps of creation, I guess. Or it's not even like there's really a standard either. But okay, most comics,
there's a general standard, yeah.
Most comics you start with some kind of script. Whether that's fully realized or a loose plot, like old Marvel bullpen style or whatever, you at least start with some sort of script that the artist then draws from. And then usually that'll contain some sort of cues and stuff for the colors too, the daytime, nighttime environment, whatever, so that they can do their job too. And then if it hasn't already had it, there's a revision of the script that's the dialogue, and then the lettering goes in. Battle Pug, on the other hand, just springs forth formed from Mike's mind onto the page, which he then passes on to get colored by Alan, and I assume you... Well, at this point, it's character colors and stuff are all established, and you'd leave a lot of it up to Alan anyway, don't you? Like, to figure out what the color stuff?
Yeah, I let him do all of that.
So, yeah, that's all handled by Alan, and then eventually Mike writes up some sort of lettering script, and I letter it. So it's kind of skipping steps, but, it just goes a ways to show you that there are more than one way to make a comic book,
That's true.
In fact, the way you do it, it's almost like how most people, not most people, but how I see a lot of people do, like, the 24-hour comics and stuff.
Well, the reason why that is because that's how I learned how to write a comic for the first time. Oh. 24-hour comic.
That explains it. Because, I've seen people do the 24-hour comics where they sit down, spend, the first hour or whatever doing their script and then work. But a lot of times I've just seen people, pour it out on the page and figure it out as they go along.
Yeah.
Which, can really lead to some interesting places.
It does. I mean, my scripts now, my stories now are more planned out than that.
Yeah.
But...
Well, on the flip side, there's Grumble, which gets scripted first, right? Still?
Yeah, Rafer writes that because he's a writer. He's a better writer.
Right.
But, we talk about what we want. It's much more of a... And he's very good in that I'll basically send him roadblocks. Like, I would like this to be in this issue. And he's like, okay. And that's my impression of Rafer.
I'm sorry. When you said roadblock, all I can think of is roadblock showing up at Rafer's house.
That's real dumb.
Who wants a body massage?
Body massage. Go!
Body massage machine. But yeah, so. Sorry. Rafer. That's your impression of Rafer.
Yeah, but that's... how it works.
Yeah.
Yeah, because do you outline though, right?
Sort of, yeah. It's not an outline the way that you're taught in school how to do an outline. I write, it's one of the things I learned from Tim, actually.
Yeah, bullet points, right?
What he would do is he would mark off a page and say, this is an issue of a comic. And then I would just write whatever I think happens in that comic. It's more of writing by pacing rather than writing by, because you're just there. Because I'm an artist. I know if I watch a movie, it's getting slow. This probably should have something here. And that's kind of how I'm writing. I'm writing from my gut. This happens and this happens. Oh, there probably should be something in here.
Yeah.
So I it's just a...
That's outlining.
It's technically outlining, but I'm not writing it out like that.
You're just sort of going
have bullet points.
You're going by loose beats, right?
Yeah, if you've seen that thing, I wouldn't call that an outline, would you?
Yeah.
It's an outline. Like the messiest outline ever.
Yeah, but that's an outline. You just don't do the refined outline.
I don't do a refine.
So you anything. Just write the things you want to happen. I just issue, write, but not necessarily the order in which they happen.
No, it's the order.
I put them in order.
But he's not like saying.
I do refine it later.
Says, this happens on this page, but it's not saying on this page is this, and this.
I do that now. What I right. do now is I, after I write that down, I print out a pagination of 24 pages and do that individually on each page, what I think should happen.
Okay. But you're not writing down individually, like, multiple panels per page? Like.
No, not unless there's a specific right. scene I see.
Yeah. Okay. Whereas that's more what I do, what I was writing.
You write what happens in each panel.
Not necessarily each panel, but I write a descriptor of each little thing that I want to happen on mm-hmm. each page. And then if there's a specific panel that it should be in, I make a panel.
Yeah.
And just to clarify for anybody, Sean and Mike both they're writing for themselves. It's not like they're writing for somebody
yeah,
else.
Yeah, I don't think you can do those for somebody else.
I don't. Yeah. Most artists, I don't think, write full scripts. Mm. There's no real reason to write a full script if you're going to draw it.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, the only reason you need a full script is to be able to convey it to somebody else, right?
So. Yeah, you're literally just describing what you already hopefully can see.
Right.
Yeah.
What so the fuck am I
doing? I'm trying to write my script now, but I don't want to draw it myself.
Then you're going to have
so
to put a lot
to
more
information. Describe all of that stuff. Yeah.
I found I just don't have patience for that.
Do you want a full script?
It would kill me to do that. I would just find any excuse not to do that. Just sitting there typing out everything. The writing the actual dialogue script for you is torturous for me.
See, that's the thing I love writing is dialogue. Whenever I've had to write scripts in the
past.
Well,
you can ask
classes.
Crank. I change stuff a lot because I'm not really thrilled with it sometimes when I see it.
You're not super changey, though.
No, I'm not, but some things flow better when after you've seen it, actually. On. I guess that's not as strange as
that. Not like a certain person that used to work with us at D&D.
Yeah.
Yeah, or there's a couple other people I work with that...
Yeah, I've seen other people rewrite like that.
Just crazy amounts of rewrites. Like, multiple times, sometimes, like, on the same page, you know? But those are also generally tend to be the people that overwrite to begin with. Like, they don't pay attention to the art, and they write so much that there's no room for it a lot of times. And that generally seems to go hand in hand. The people that rewrite a lot are the people that overwrite stuff, anyway. But
Shakespeare's.
Yeah. It's not prose, damn it. Be pithy. I wonder if there are people that never, like, I remember something reading, it was a Stephen King book about writing. Mm-hmm. And one of the things he said early on was he worked with an editor and wrote a piece, and the editor went through and, like, redlined half of it or something like that. And I'm paraphrasing, I don't remember exactly what the story was, but the gist of it was is that, you know, he learned how to kind of try to be more concise, which is, I guess, where his short stories came from.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds strange to hear Stephen King say he, you know, tries to be a concise writer when you look at some of his rambling passages, but he writes long stuff, but his stuff is all, none of it really seems super, like, useless or superfluous, I guess is the word I'm looking for. But yeah, that always kind of stuck with me, and, you know, I look at stuff that's just, what was that, like, that joke I was talking about a couple of years ago, where it's, you know, when you can boil down what a bunch of characters on a single panel or a single page, when you can boil down what they're saying is just yup, you know, but you're doing it with like 20 words a balloon or something. Then
I see it all the time. I mean, I'm not going to mention names, but I've read comics by people that I know.
Yeah.
Like they haven't seemed to get that point.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, if you can say something simpler, do it.
And even in survival, that was sort of the thing I did whenever I read a script is I would take a lot of stuff out. Because Tim expected the worst in a reader, I think.
Well, and I think you're right. I think part of it comes from that with a lot of writers. They want to make sure somebody gets it.
Yeah. Right?
Like, and they expect everybody to be dumb. Like, so they're playing to the lowest common denominator.
Yeah, that was definitely true with the first issue, and it happened a lot after that. But, I mean, we kind of... And there was stuff that I was paranoid about, too. Like, I always was afraid that people would get upset about things in stories that they never get upset about.
Yeah. And I don't know. You know, I mean, it's hard to tell. I mean, I don't know exactly what you mean, like, upset about, as an example, like, a comment somebody makes or somebody's... Like, whatever.
Some of that stuff, yeah.
I mean, putting your comic out there, it's like having conversation in an open room with a bunch of strangers anyway. You never know if what you're going to say is going to set somebody off.
Well, you know? I mean, I think I was more concerned with what I thought, you know. And this was back before social media was even as stupid as it is now, you know. And I forget what it was about the pregnancy part of the story I thought was going to be an issue with people. And I don't know why I did, but.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are some things that, you know, I do think you have to step back and ask yourself, you know, do I need to do this? Am I doing this just to, like, shock somebody? Am I doing this because I don't know what else to do or something, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to tell these days, and so I just don't try anymore.
Right on. And it's not like you're not trying not to offend anybody. I mean, there are certain people you don't care if you offend, right?
Let's say the Trump Putin thing in Battletoad 1.
Right.
Which was something I was worried that people were... For one thing, I thought people were just going to think it was a lame joke because I wrote it 2 years ago.
Right.
And I was like, well, this is going to be dated. And it is dated.
Yeah, that's pitfall of topical
only
humor.
Only thing I've seen criticized about the comic is the Trump stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But it's
usually by crazy people that love Trump.
That's what I'm saying. Like, do you really care if you piss off a Trumper?
No, I don't. It was like, if I was going to be upset about something, that's a safe thing to get, worried about. But that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about.
Right, yeah.
I still did it because I didn't care that much.
I didn't care enough to, like, redo the issue.
Yeah, I'm not going to rewrite it.
You did change names or something, though.
I changed... the Putin character's name because I had his name as Puto, and somebody told me that's offensive.
Oh, it's Spanish for something, right? I thought that was Puta.
No, this is a different thing.
Oh, okay.
Because I had this conversation with somebody.
Oh. Oh, it's not like I'm, you know, multilingual master or anything.
No, I'm not.
Well, I was saying I wouldn't, but you're probably not either. Although, weren't you trying to learn Irish or something?
When I was in high school.
Oh, no, I thought it was more recently.
I thought that was cool.
I thought more recently you were trying to learn a different language.
I was trying to learn Spanish.
Oh, that's what it was.
Then a lady in Mexico City said, maybe you should try to learn Spanish. And I was like, oh, great, so it's working.
Cool. Well, Mike, I'm going to bring up the point now where I ask you about email because I'm keeping track of time.
Oh, no way. Really?
Yeah.
I appreciate you.
Hey, man. I'm doing my part.
Hi, Frank.
You're a real friend.
Hi.
We have an email, too.
All right. Well, read that beautiful bean mail.
They're all from Jim.
Yay.
They're all from Jim. John Amor writes... Artist friend of the show.
This podcast needs more Sean.
Yeah. Hi, friends. Crank, how do you feel about Tom Welling coming back to reprise his role as Clark for the Crisis event?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know anything about it, really.
Yeah. Gamo is like
Yeah, Erica Durant and Tom Welling are coming back for this Supergirl Green Arrow Flash crossover.
So he, but I thought they already had Superman on Supergirl and it was a different actor.
This is Crisis. This is multiverse stuff.
Oh, okay. So this is.
So they're going to have Brandon Routh play his Superman as well.
No kidding. Well, that actually ought to be kind of fun, I think.
Bonus question. When Chris Makepeace was at his peak, this is a flawed question, John. When Chris Makepeace was at his peak, which Marvel or DC character do you think he could have played? This is a difficult question because when was Chris Makepeace at his peak?
Right. I mean, obviously in Meatballs, he could have been a Kid Flash.
Right. Rudy the Rabbit.
Yeah. And then My Bodyguard. Yeah, I don't know about that one. He maybe a New Mutant.
He would have been Jericho on Teen Titans because of the curly hair.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. And then, you know, like Vamp, Chris Makepeace.
Yeah. You're saying he should have been Blade?
No, but he could have been in the Blade series. You know?
Chris Makepeace is Blade.
Yeah, I don't think that flies, but he probably could have been like a Blade sidekick.
Okay. Sharpie? Blade and his sidekick Sharpie?
There wasn't actually a sidekick called Sharpie, was there?
No, I just made that up.
Oh, Blade and Sharpie? Like... Yeah, okay.
Okay, that was his email. This is from Captain Colin. He writes, "Hello, chaps. In the last week, my two favorite TV shows of all time had birthdays. Bottom was 28 years old. I've never heard of Bottom."
That sounds familiar.
"And Spaced was 20.
Wow, it's been that long.
Yep. This makes me feel old. Did you guys ever watch these shows? Yeah, I watched Crank showed me Space.
Yeah, I remember watching it. Somebody else told me about it back in the mid-2000s, I guess, when I was living with Jenny.
Yeah, and I loved it.
And I'm trying to remember. I know I watched Bottom. I'm pretty sure I did, but I'm trying to remember what the hell that was about. That ran in the early 90s, apparently. I'm looking it up on IMDb. Oh, yeah. It had Adrian Edmondson and Rick Mayall. And they were...
Really?
It was kind of like an odd couple-y, like they were roommates.
Again?
Yeah. But it was just the two of them. That's why I remember it, because I was watching it on the tail end of rewatching all the Young Ones stuff. But yeah, I like Bottom, too.
Quotes from these shows have become everyday language. Any shows done that for you? Yeah, of course. Too many.
Well, apparently, on that video game made a real impression on Mike because he was saying sure a lot.
Sure. Sure.
I know there are a lot of things I say that I picked up from TV shows, but that's just because I'm a parrot when it comes to linguistics, I guess.
Julie will tell you that she hates it.
Hates what?
That I do that.
Oh.
Wait, doesn't she do the same thing, but with her own... things that she says?
Not really.
I thought she's going to murder you all the time.
Yeah, but that's not from a TV show. I'll bring that up in the next conversation with her. I'm sure it'll...
And then
I'll win that argument.
And then she will murder you.
Also, I didn't say that, so
I'll say that as she's stabbing me. But you... Stab, 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 stab.
Mike's last words. I'm a dying.
I'm a dying? That's from The Simpsons. I say, speaking of Simpsons, that's probably the most that everybody quotes from, I bet.
No.
I say, let's fight, them's fighting words all the time. So much that I don't think people know that's from The Simpsons.
I wouldn't have placed it, but I wasn't like a big Simpsons watcher.
Here's the funny thing about that. My Simpsons quotes that I say are mostly because my friend Ron used to say them all the time, and he is a Simpsons freak. So I'm mostly quoting him quoting the Sims.
Right. Yeah. I do that too, where I quote things I remember people saying, like that I thought was funny, so I still say them. Like, I had a friend, this is what, like way back in the 90s, he was talking about the weather, and somebody was like, or somebody was talking to him about the weather, and they were like, man, it's nice out. And he's like, yeah, it looks good out. I think I'll leave it out. And it didn't really make any sense, but I always thought that was funny, you know? So, like, that sticks in my head. I don't necessarily repeat it a lot, though.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't.
But you might agree with this, Mike, but I think maybe like the most overquoted movie kind of thing is probably Princess Bride.
Yeah, at what point I would have said Holy Grail, but yeah, Princess Bride.
Because that does seem like it has a...
I've wanted to slap somebody saying anybody want a peanut. Yeah.
Have fun storming the castle.
Yeah. Yeah, you get a punch for that.
Or I don't think that means what you think it means. Or whatever it is he says there. I don't remember.
That one I kind of like.
What about, what happened to your face? Did you burn it with acid or something?
That's not really an Andre impression as much as it is like a German guy.
I was thinking it was kind of Arnoldy. But...
Yeah.
Yeah, even though I knew what you were doing. Did you burn it with acid or something?
That's a weird Arnold.
We've
got less Arnold somehow.
What happened? Y'all burned your face with acid or
something? Try and do a deeper Arnold and sound drunk.
What happened to your face? Did you burn it with acid or something?
That's closer. It's a little too enunciated.
What happened to your face?
What happened to your face?
Or something like that.
It's almost getting Connery. Anyway.
Best wishes from all the lads on the Ark Royal. Captain Cup.
Ark Royal?
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
I'm wondering if that's a reference to one of those shows that I'm just missing.
Probably.
I haven't watched Space in a long time. So speaking of old... one of the things I was working on this week was a reissue of an album that's like 22 years old now that friends of mine put out back in 97, and it's getting reissued by this metal label, and we did new artwork and stuff for it, so you know, we were trying to get that out, and I sat there and looked at it because I can remember when they recorded it, you know, and I'm like, Jesus, that was like 22 years ago already.
That's the way linear time works.
Well, actually, they found that physics, you know, like observation does affect time.
What?
That's why things seem like they go faster as you get older.
What?
Yeah.
Wait.
So but, Red Dead Revolver is true?
So that means...
But it's all relative, you know?
Does that mean because you watch a pot, it takes a long time to boil?
That could influence it, yeah. Observation, man. I am jumbling together a bunch of different little facts there that probably aren't right, so... Let's just assume I'm not right. But all right. It sounds cool. So.
Okay.
Well, is that it for the emails?
Yeah.
Thank you for writing. We appreciate it.
We do. I kind of screwed this drawing up.
Oh, no. And as for, has anybody got stuff in stores this week?
I don't think so.
I looked and all I saw was I've got a Rick and Morty number 54 that I lettered is in stores. Oh, and Albatross has a Goon Volume 1 TPB out.
Mall Number 2 from Vault Comics came out yesterday.
Is that Mall M-A-L-L or M-A-U-L?
M-A-L-L.
That's what I asked.
Mall Number 2.
Remember Mall Madness, that board game?
No.
We should do a comic of Mall Madness. It's all about shopping in a mall in the 80s. Wait, is that what Mall's about?
I think Hackslash versus Crow 3 came out this week.
Okay. Hackslash versus Crow number 3.
Jim drew that. Ben colored it.
Oh, you colored it too? Good job, man. Multidisciplined.
Oh, Creepshow, the series, premieres today.
and I did some art for it.
Sweet.
On Shudder Network.
Do you know which episodes? Or is it just in every episode?
I think I did it for 4 episodes, so who knows how much you'll use of anything. But if you have Shudder, you're into horror.
So are they keeping the comic transitions on that for the series? Cool.
Yeah, that and a werewolf transformation.
Shudder's cheap.
Yeah.
Oh. That was something else. I saw them posted on Instagram. I guess it's up. But I lettered a little 1-page thing for the what's that thing I'm looking for? You know, the detective from Stumptown. Stumptown. That's what it is. So there was
Stumptown.
I lettered that last volume of it.
You're real famous.
But yeah, Justin.
Can you introduce me to Colby Smothers?
I didn't know anything about the show until I saw him promoting it for SDCC. But
so you're saying that you can introduce me to Agent Maria Hill?
You should get your cousin to introduce you to people. She's got more of an in than I do.
I just don't want to do that. That's kind of cheesy.
I didn't realize Jake Johnson is in the show until the ad popped up on Instagram for me with him.
Yeah, that got me excited, too.
The preview stuff I've seen, it looks like a fun show. So,
I've heard it's good.
I
haven't watched it, but.
But yeah, we did it based on the first trailer that they released for it, I think is what it was. We did a 1-page comic thing that I lettered.
Oh, this was a promo for it?
Yeah, I mean, I did letter the last volume of Stumptown, too, but.
Sure, whatever.
But this was just about a promo for the network or the station or whatever. Not the station, but the
station?
The network, you know, that's airing it. So, yeah.
People see channel anymore? What channel is it on?
Sure, YouTube has channels. Amazon has channels.
It's true.
So, I think that's it for this week.
All of it.
You can reach us at crankcast.com, crankcast@gmail.com. Go read Battlepug at battlepug.com. Well, that's the old Battlepug. You can go read New Battlepug if you go to the comic store, right? So.
You should go buy the Compugnium, too.
Yeah.
I wouldn't hate you for it.
Right. And it's got a lot of stuff in it. A lot of stuff.
It does have a lot of stuff.
And a groovy cover.
It's a lot of stuff.
It's got like 30 pages of extra material in it.
Yeah. And a groovy cover.
It does have a groovy cover. What's his face is really good.
That was Loopy Dave, right?
Dave Dunstan, yeah.
Yeah.
He just did the cover for the second Grumble volume.
Cool.
So I'm just basically using all the money I make off these comics to get good people to do covers.
Are you bragging? You're bragging.
Bragging about being a dummy?
Bragging about getting all the...
Bragging about being a poor businessman.
Getting all these good people to do covers.
Oh, yeah. He is good.
Yeah, it's true. The best brags are often true. Go to YouTube and look up 4-Star Studios and go watch the warm-up.
Eventually we'll do one that's not screwed up.
Hopefully maybe somebody else can figure out the frog system so that you guys don't have to.
All I know is that I'm winning.
I'll
always be winning.
Yeah, and you can look up everybody else on Instagram and stuff too and follow people. Because they post pictures of things they're working on and things they do. And, don't forget to hit like and ring the bell. Subscribe to the Crankcast. Whatever. It doesn't actually have a subscription. Well, yeah, it does, actually. You can go to iTunes and subscribe. And you could hit like there, too, I think, and comment and stuff if you want. I don't really ever check iTunes, so I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you check that stuff?
No. I mean, I check
you
it.
I don't even know how many subscribers we have now.
I check the public page every now and then just to make sure the episodes are publishing. You know, but yeah, I don't actually like really do much.
Crank better. Won't tell me how many people listen to this show.
That's because Crank don't know.
That's funny.
I do not keep track of visitors. And stuff. I mean, I used to look at the stats, but...
What if we have, like, millions of people and we could have been rich a long time ago?
Do you really think we could have been rich? Now, if,
no, well, I'd be some people are making a living off of this.
If we had that kind of buzz, people would be talking about us publicly and we'd know.
Yes.
So.
I believe that you could go without knowing about stuff.
Oh, yeah, especially lately. Jesus. But, and of course there's all sorts of places, you know.
I hear, yeah, I'm on Twitter too much. I'd hear.
Yeah. I'm sure you would. I'm trying to think of the last time I actually Googled Crankcast to see if there was anybody talking about it or anything. But anyway, so that's it for this week. Hope you have a good weekend, and we'll catch you later.
Goodbye.
Later, dude.
Bye-bye.
Later, Skater.